Your Bible, our second reading to Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Now these are the nations which the Lord left to prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan, only that the generations of the children of Israel might know, to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof, namely five lords of the Philistines, and all the Canaanites, and the Sidonians, and the Hivites that dwelt in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon unto the entering in of Hamath. And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, and Amorites, and Perizzites, and Hivites, and Jebusites. And they took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and served their gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and forgot the Lord their God, and served Baalim and the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, and the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. And when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel, who delivered them, even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war, and the Lord delivered Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand, and his hand prevailed against Cushan-Rishathaim. And the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And he gathered unto him the children of Ammon and Amalek, and went and smote Israel and possessed the city of palm trees. So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. But when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised them up a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, a man left-handed. And by him the children of Israel sent a present unto Eglon, king of Moab. But Ehud made him a dagger which had two edges of a cubit length, and he did gird it under his raiment upon his right thigh. And he brought the present unto Eglon, the king of Moab, and Eglon was a very fat man. And when he had made an end to offer the present, he sent away the people that bear the present. But he himself turned again from the quarries that were by Gilgal and said, I have a secret errand unto thee, O king, who said, keep silence. And all that stood by him went out from him, and Ehud came unto him, and he was sitting in a summer parlor, which he had for himself alone. And Ehud said, I have a message from God unto thee. And he arose out of his seat. And Ehud put forth his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly. And the haft also went in after the blade, and the fat closed upon the blade so that he could not draw the dagger out of his belly, and the dirt came out. Then Ehud went forth through the porch and shut the doors of the parlor upon him and locked them. When he was gone out, his servants came, and when they saw that, behold, the doors of the parlor were locked, they said, surely he covereth his feet in his summer chamber. And they tarried till they were ashamed. And behold, he opened not the doors of the parlor. Therefore they took a key and opened them. And behold, their Lord was fallen down dead on the earth. And Ehud escaped while they tarried, and passed beyond the quarries, and escaped unto Seirat. And it came to pass, when he was come, that he blew a trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim. And the children of Israel went down with him from the mount, and he before them. And he said unto them, Follow after me, for the Lord hath delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. And they went down after him, and took the fords of Jordan toward Moab, and suffered not a man to pass over. And they slew of Moab at that time about 10,000 men, all lusty, and all men of valor. And there escaped not a man. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 80 years. And after him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel. May God add his blessing to the reading, to the hearing of his most holy word. All right, so we have some, we have three different scenarios here, three different vignettes. The first is having to do with the, the first is the setup, and then we have the three vignettes. The setup is what? That the Lord himself caused certain tribes to persist into the land. Now, we might think, we might be tempted to think that it was of the children of Israel, that it was their sloth, their laziness, their inability, their weakness, their cowardice, some other necessity that they did not get up and follow the command of the Lord to go out and to destroy those heathen nations like they were told to under Moses and under Joshua. And that is true. That would be a true statement. It was indeed due to their sloth. But notice how that the Lord providentially is overarching, the sovereign over all things, and that the Lord left those nations for a particular purpose. From the Israelite side, from how it appears to them, they may have thought, well, it's due to our sloth, due to our inability. We're afraid. They're big. We're small. They're fortified. We're not. They might have thought all of those things. But from the divine perspective, the Lord left them for a particular reason. And this is really, really interesting. The reason that he left them is so that the children who grew up during the days of the Canaanite wars, when they first entered into the land, would also labor in the same way when they grew up in the wars that they would have to prosecute to throw out the rest of the Canaanites. That they might learn, are you ready? That having a godly society, having a godly establishment, following the commands of the Lord is worth some strife and struggle. That they wouldn't get it free. That they wouldn't get it without a proper laboring on their own account to inflame their estimation of the importance of it. That they would themselves get off of their couches and get up and get out there and get after it. That's what it says. Paraphrased, of course. Notice how it is recounted here for us that only that the generations of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at least such as before knew nothing thereof, so that they might gather themselves together and throw out the rest of the Canaanites. They were there to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commands of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. So, children, are you ready to do battle? Are you ready to enter into the battles of your parents? That's the use of this passage. It's for that next generation. I'm old and not getting any younger. But there are those that are coming after me, a second generation and a third generation. And what ought we to expect from you, second and third generation? We ought to expect that you will rise up and enter into the same labors, the same struggles, the same battles, because the Canaanites remain in the land, even to our day. And in some cases, like we see here, the church has invited them into the door. And so what we work for here today, purity of worship, purity of doctrine, purity, holiness in life, a whole life Christianity. What we work for and what we labor for here today and what distinguishes us. Those are the kinds of things, those are the labors that you will enter into in your day as well. And you will pass on, you will bequeath that same concern to your children after you. And the Lord will, according to His own providential ordering, and the kingdom of our Lord Jesus Christ as it grows and expands and covers the face of the earth until the day of the consummation, the Lord will order providentially before Himself and unto you what kind of enemies you will face generation by generation by generation. And those labors and those wars and those battles and those struggles that you will enter into for the sake of faithfulness. Some ages will be ages of great attainment. Some ages will be ages of great apostasy. Every age will be an age where we pass on to the next generation those labors that they must labor for, that they must walk in, that they must continue and indeed improve upon from the generation before. So that's the introduction to the section. We are tried by our God. Let us remember that. And then the children of Israel noticed they did not obey the voice of the Lord. They invited the enemies in the gates. And so this left indeed all the more work to do for that next generation, but it was work that they were required to do. So it is a question of what we will bequeath to our children in our ecclesiastical establishments, and it will be a question to our children of how they take what is bequeathed to them and how they improve it. That's the first section, verses 1 through 7. In the second section, we have the Lord's anger burning hot against Israel because they had turned away from Him, and He raised up an oppressor. You remember his name? Cushan Rishathaim. Children, do you remember what his name means from our readings, from our time in story time? Cushan Rishathaim, his name means Blackie, who is doubly bad. He's not just bad. He's the baddest of the bad. He's Blackie, baddest of the bad. That's what his name means. And so the Lord raised him up. King of Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia in those days is an area of Palestine moving toward the north and west. And so here they come from the north and west to invade Canaan land, Israel. And the Lord grants him success. And so they are oppressed from at the hand of Cushan Rishathaim 8 years, it says. 8 years. But then the Lord raised up a deliverer, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. This is one of those first judges. Notice it says that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war, and the Lord delivered Blackie, doubly bad, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand. And he judged Israel and went out to war. And the land had rest 40 years. 40 years of rest from the oppressor. So it speaks of the Lord's grace to His people. It speaks of the love He has for His people for Christ's sake. And how because of Christ He is moved to compassion and benevolence toward them, even though they had sinned against Him. He sent an oppressor and He turned them. So they apostatized. He sent them bondage. They cried unto Him and He sent a deliverer. A, B, C, D. Right? Which is the repetitive outline of the book of Judges. All right. So then in 12 through the end of the chapter. Well, no, sorry, not quite the end. 30. We have one verse, 31, speaking of Shamgar. But we have the days of Eglon and Ehud is the next story. And you remember the man Eglon, the king of Moab, Eglon. His name means calf. Yeah, I know, it's easy to go there. He is the fatted calf, in other words. What a name, right? And Ehud is the deliverer. Now, this will be the beginning of something that we see here, that the Lord is going to deliver His people from unlikely sources. Why do you say it's an unlikely source? Because, believe it or not, left-handed people were suspect. I know some of you are left-handed. You're thinking, we get that even to this day. Ehud was a left-handed man. And as a left-handed man, he would be an unlikely source for deliverance. No one would think that Ehud would be the deliverer. And so, left-handed? Nothing to worry about there. Don't worry about him. He's a lefty. That's how they were thinking in those days. And so we have Ehud. It seems he was not only left-handed, you know, the Latin for left-handed, you know, we get the word sinister from that. I know, it's interesting. But think about this for a moment. What does Ehud do? Well, it seems if he's not sinister, he's at least crafty, isn't he? And so he comes into the king of Moab's presence, Eglon's presence, and he says, "O king, I have a secret errand for you. I need some time alone with you, king." He's already got the dagger strapped up on his right side. "King, I need some time with you alone." "Oh, you're a lefty. I got nothing to fear. No problem. Everybody out." And so he sends everybody out. And he goes over to greet him. And, of course, the king's going to be looking at his right hand to come out if there's going to be a threat. But instead, it's his left hand drawn across his body, pulls the dagger, stabs him with it. And because Eglon is the fatted calf, he loses the dagger. One cubit, 16 to 18 inches, loses the dagger in Ehud's body. In it goes, and out comes the stuff. And so now that he has slain the king of Moab, he says, "I need an escape plan." Maybe he had this plan before, maybe he didn't. I don't know, but he goes out and he locks the door behind him. Click, the door is locked, and away he goes. And the guards are right there. He had a private errand for the king. Now he's leaving. They don't suspect anything. And so away he goes. And apparently he's got a long way to go. But that's okay because he's got a long time to go there because the door is locked. The guards are thinking, well, the king needs some privacy. He's covering his feet. You know what that means. He needs some privacy right now. And we can't just barge in on him. And so away Ehud goes. Eglon is lying dead in his summer palace. They don't know it. And so they knock and they knock and they knock. "O king, O king, O king." And it says that they waited until they were ashamed. Well, I guess we're just going to have to barge in on him, no matter what condition he's in. So they do, and they find him dead. Ehud is not just an escape artist, however. He goes up to the hill, and he rallies the troops of Israel, and he says, "Come and follow me. The Lord has delivered Moab into our hands. We've cut the head off. The body won't be a difficulty." And of course, all of the discomfiture that happens when a nation like that loses its king, they take advantage of that under the hand of the Lord, and they rout the Moabites. And it says that the land had rest for 80 years, 80 years after that. All right, so then after him, there was a man named Shamgar of Anath. Now, we're not told. This is a little out of the order. But I think there's something to be said here, something else to be said. It's out of the order. We don't read of any apostasy. We don't read of any bondage. We don't read of any crying out to the Lord. All we hear about is this Shamgar guy who rises up one day and with an ox goad, he slays, how many? Was it 600 Philistines? Is that what it says? Yeah, 600 men. With an ox goad, and he also delivered Israel. Now, Moab and Philistia, two different areas, two different geographies entirely. So this is obviously a different story, a different scenario, but we just jump to the end here, and it's not seen exactly why, but it is interesting. We have another unlikely deliverer. What does Shamgar find in his hand? A sword? A spear? Some kind of armament? No. He's got an ox goad. What is he? He's a plowman. He didn't get up in the morning and say, you know, today I'm going to be a warrior. He got up and he grabbed his ox goad. He got up and he said, well, I'm going to work. But in his going to work that day, with that same ox goad, he slew 600 Philistines. Again, another unlikely deliverer. You see, the Lord is in the habit throughout the book of Judges of drawing up unlikely deliverers. Why? So that He would get the glory. Because if it's by might and prowess, if it's by some excuse that we can muster up and say, well, it's according to my righteousness, it's according to my might, it's according to my prowess, it's according to my cleverness, it's according to my military stratagem, well, then what do? We take credit. We arrogate to ourselves that glory which belongs to God. And so the Lord here shows Himself in the business of using unlikely deliverers for His people that they might call upon Him and thank Him. Thus ends the reading then of Judges chapter 3.